Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. It's been 8 years since authorities in Haiti arrested Misak Damas, who stands accused of killing his wife and 5 children in Collier County. Shortly after that arrest, as he was being transported back to Florida, Damas told a reporter he did kill them and said he hoped for the death penalty. Since then, there's been a string of public defenders and court appearances, a trip to state mental hospital, and changes to the state's laws on capital punishment. Following the case, through all these twists and turns, has been Ryan Mills. He's a reporter with the Naples Daily News and joins us on the phone to talk about the next twist coming this Friday, a Ferretta inquiry. Ryan, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
We are talking about the Misak Damas case in Collier County. He's the man accused of the brutal killing of his wife and 5 children. They were 9, 6, 5, and 3 years old, and the youngest was 11 months old. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Ryan, first, for people who aren't up on this story, can you give us a little background on the Damas case, the crime, and what has happened since?
Yeah, so it was in September of 2009 that we got a call. We got a tip one night that there was a major crime scene in North Naples off of Pine Ridge Road, and it turned out that what they discovered was the bodies of a mother and her 5 children inside their condo. The only person who was not at the crime scene from the family was the husband, and that would be Misak Damas. Long story short, they eventually caught him in Haiti. We had a reporter down there at the time, a photographer, and we had some footage, exclusive footage at the time, of him admitting that, yes, he did kill his family, and he wanted death. He claimed that it was evil demons and spirits that made him do it, and you know, he's been going through the court system for a long time. You know, he asked that day for pretty much speedy justice. He wanted to be put to death, you know, right then, but it's taken almost 8 years at this point.
Yeah, we have a clip of audio from that right after he was arrested, as you mentioned, in Haiti. Naples Daily News cameras were there and captured this exchange. Let's have a listen.
Mr. Damas, anything you want to say?
Yes. I want to be buried with my family. That's what I want to do.
Did you kill them?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Only God knows.
You don't know?
No.
What happened, Mr. Damas?
As you mentioned, he said he wanted swift justice, and he said later in that video, which is on the Naples Daily News website, he said in there that he hopes to be buried with his wife and children that Saturday. He was wanting it to be finished that quickly. It's a confession, really, but then it's followed by statements that his mother made him do it, other religious statements. Has he maintained that stance, that these claims about spiritual involvement and things?
Yeah, I mean, he's talked about being possessed by demons. He has, you know, claimed to have some sort of like a religious conversion. I don't know if it was, you know, he talked about religion even in that first interview there. It wasn't an interview, but that first encounter we had with him. So he's really been playing up the spiritual side of things since the very beginning. You know, he's been preaching in the jail. You know, he talked at the hearing in June about voodoo, things like that. I mean, he's been pretty consistent in kind of some of this. I mean, it's all over the map, like from voodoo to deep Christianity.
Yeah. Have there been questions then about his mental stability?
Have there been questions about his mental stability? Yeah. I mean, he's, I mean, from the very beginning, there were questions about his mental stability. In 2014, a judge, after they had several experts examine him, ruled that he was mentally incompetent to stand trial. He had a major mental illness, and the judge sent him to a mental hospital to get checked out. So he was there for 7 months. He had his competency restored. I think it was a year. It was April 2016 that his current lawyers filed a motion stating that they believe that he had a severe brain injury. So, I mean, his mental health has been a concern since the very beginning.
Well, at one point, a judge considered him incompetent, and then after that stay in the state mental hospital, he was considered restored. So, I mean, the thing is really kind of dragged on. How many public defenders have been on his case?
I don't know. A lot.
Did you lose count?
I mean, he's gone through... he had, I don't know, I really don't know. I mean, he doesn't have public defenders right now. He's got court-appointed attorneys who are private attorneys that are working his case right now. But, I mean, there was one period where he went through, like, two of them in a month. I mean, it was, you know, they had conflicts, they had reasons that they couldn't be his attorneys, and so they were let off. I mean, so he's been going through attorneys. The two he's got right now have been with him for a couple of years now, so and they're pretty confident that we're nearing the end, and that you know, a trial is scheduled for the first week of September.
Yeah, but before that, we have a hearing that's coming up on Friday. It's called a Ferretta inquiry. Can you explain what that is?
Mm-hmm. So you have guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment a right to counsel. In 1975, there was a Supreme Court case. It was Ferretta versus California, where the Supreme Court ruled that in addition to the right to counsel, you also have a right to represent yourself. And so, to have that, you know, to get to that point where you are representing yourself, there is what is called a Ferretta inquiry or a Ferretta hearing, and the judge has to make sure that the defendant who is requesting to represent himself is knowingly and understanding what he is doing, that he is mentally capable of making that decision, and then beyond being able to mentally make that decision, being able to understand what he needs to do to represent himself in court. Now, you don't have to be a trained lawyer to defend yourself in court, but you have to have, you know, some very basic knowledge of, you know, how the court system works. So that's what's going to happen on Friday. You know, I've never been to a Ferretta hearing, but I've talked with some attorneys who know this, and, you know, he's going to be asked questions about his, you know, levels of education, his ability to read and write, mental illness obviously is going to come up, and then they're going to question him about, you know, his understanding of different pieces of the court system, and you know, I would imagine there's going to be things that he just doesn't know, how to pick a jury, you know, the rights that he has in terms of that.
Voir dire questioning, yeah.
That all goes through, is part of what's going to happen on Friday.
But so it's mainly to determine if he is knowingly giving up his right to counsel. But can someone knowingly give up their right to counsel if they've been deemed mentally incompetent? That's going to be probably.
Well, there's two levels here. I mean, there's the mentally. He is right now not deemed mentally incompetent. He's been deemed competent to stand trial. That is a lesser threshold. The competency to stand trial is different than the competency to represent yourself, and it's a lower bar. So he has at this point been deemed that he is over that first threshold of he is competent to, you know, stand trial. Now, whether that means he's competent to stand trial with him sitting there and his, you know, defense attorneys running the trial. Now this is another step to say, okay, are you competently and knowingly and intelligently removing your attorneys from this case? So that's kind of where we are with this. And then, do you know the basics for how to run a trial? And that's where we are.
And the two attorneys that he has now have said that they're going to fight to stay on his case.
Yeah, as much as they can. They want to be on this case. At least that's what they've told me. They intend to stay on this case. And, you know, the thing is that even if he were to get his, you know, get his way and represent himself in court and turn around and plead guilty right then and there, that doesn't make, you know, that's not the end of this. I mean, it's the end of the guilt phase. There's two phases. There's the guilt phase, and then there is the sentencing phase. So in this case, since it is a death penalty trial, there's going to have to be a separate trial just for the sentencing phase to determine if he would serve life in prison or if he would get the death penalty.
And that has changed since his arrest.
And his attorneys have said they intend to be there throughout the entire process. So if he, you know, turns them down and represents himself for the guilt phase, they intend to be there for him for the sentencing phase, and that is, you know, an even more difficult kind of court proceeding to run.
And another twist that's come since the arrest, the prosecutor has indicated that he's seeking the death penalty, but what has happened with the death penalty statewide, I mean, there have been some changes in that law. Could that have any kind of an impact as far as having to have a unanimous jury?
Yeah, I mean, could it have an impact? I mean, sure. If they were to go to trial and a jury, you know, didn't unanimously convict him, then I guess that would have an impact. But, you know, in terms of, you know, I think that the law at this point, they're pretty confident that it's, you know, it's stable and it's not going to be overturned or get, you know, have the same kind of, you know, challenges that it had over the last couple of years. I think a lot of those kinks, they're pretty confident, have been worked out.
Yeah. Are there any family members on the wife's side or even on Damas's side that have been following this case or going to any of these court appearances?
I think they did more early on, more so on on her side, but I know that he's had family members in the courtroom in the past too, and he's called out to them. And early on in the court proceedings, he was more active in terms of causing scenes and acting up in court. I reached out to some family members for the story we ran last weekend. I talked to a sister of the victim, and she said she doesn't really care what he does. She doesn't really want to think about this because it makes her relive everything that she went through. So, my guess is she's not going to be there on Friday. I also spoke with his father and Damas's father, and he was very emotional about this. He said it's too hard for him. The last hearings I've been to, there have not been family members in there, but they've also been pretty procedural as well. So, I'm sure that there are family members following this. Whether they're going to be in the courtroom, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, the next court situation is going to be in September. It's a 4-week trial that's slated to begin in September. That's to be held in Collier County?
Right now. I mean, obviously there's going to be, they have to pick a jury that, they need to find jurors that, that maybe don't know that much about this case. And it's been 8 years, so that I think that might be possible. But the plan right now is for it to be in Collier County.
So how could a judge's decision Friday have an impact on that date?
Well, if he gives him the right to represent himself and Mr. Damas chooses to plead guilty, then there would not be a trial. They'd have to schedule the sentencing phase of this case going forward. So, I mean, if he pleads guilty, is it potential that there would not, that September 5th date might not even need to be held?
Yeah, that definitely would have an impact. So
you've
been covering this story for so many years. It seems like your newspaper spent a lot of time with the family and even the Haitian community. How does it feel covering something like this for so long?
Obviously this was as shocking of any case. I covered cops and crime in Collier County for several years here, and this is as shocking as any case that I'd ever covered and have covered since. Early on it was just every move he made, we wanted to be on top of it. But over 8 years, it's kind of slowed down, and we've still go to the court hearings. They're not quite as eventful, so maybe there was a bit of a lull, but I think that the interest is kind of picking up again because we are getting to the end. And, I personally, as someone who was there on the very first day, I want to be involved at the end, and I want to, I want to be there when there's resolution to this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens and how things go forward. So that's all the time we have for today, but I just wanted to thank you for being part of the show, Ryan Mills with Naples Daily News. We're going to look forward to your continued reporting as this case continues to try and lurch forward.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Coming up, a conversation with the Miami-based Guardian reporter who uncovered a small parcel of land that Donald Trump bought years ago for $1 from a woman who'd bought it a month earlier for a few thousand dollars. We'll try to unravel that mystery up next.